their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado, this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker. Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm fine. It's interesting doing these from our respective caves.
Yep.
Where we go out a few times in the day and see sunlight and remember what it used to be like.
And we had snow, and I think we've got more coming, and you know,
typical
weather that happens in April in Colorado, where just when you think it's warming up and things start to turn green, you get 3 or 4 inches of snow or more.
So why not?
Anyway, yeah, it was very cold the other day. It was about 9 degrees Fahrenheit the other morning at my house. So pretty chilly, brisk.
It's good for you. Makes you tough.
It does. And, you know, I will say, though, it makes staying inside and not going out much easier. And I hope all our listeners are.
And fires are really nice on days like that.
Exactly. So, you know, I hope nobody's going too stir crazy. I mean, obviously, we're kind of in a unique perspective because you're more or less retired and I do a lot of my work from home anyway. So this isn't impacting me in a routine kind of way, but I think both of us are kind of a little bit,
not on crazy.
Edge, just a little bit like, okay, I need to find something to do. So what have you, so today we're going to talk about some of the stuff that we've been doing. Last week we're talking about white balance, which was pretty cool, but that was more of a technical thing. So what are we doing? What have you been doing since we last talked, and what's keeping you busy?
Well, one of the things I've been playing with is a thing called a Nikon ES2, I don't know, film adapter or whatever it is, but it's a little gizmo that you can put onto the front of a macro lens, specifically about a 60 millimeter lens. And then you can put in negatives or slides. And these kind of things have been around for many, many decades. So it's just a newer version of something like that. And I'd actually gotten it about a year and a half ago and just didn't have the time to play with it. So guess what? I have the time to play with it now. So that's one thing we'll talk about. And then you're going to talk about some experiments that you've been playing with, some mad scientist things.
Sometimes I have to get all science on things, and I like to say I do the messy work so that other people, so my clients and my listeners, don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the bottom line is a easy answer, but you like to verify stuff for yourself. So I've been trying not to go nuts, but you know, talking about film stuff. I mean, I've got all these 3-ring binders of sleeves of slide transfer 35 millimeter slides. Mm-hmm. And somewhere I've got boxes of negatives that I've never digitized. They're just, you know, old prints, things in shoe boxes that aren't even in albums really. If there was one thing I was really bad about when I was taking pictures with just print film, just snapshot type stuff, was putting them in photo albums. One of my college buddies was more in charge of that. He has all of the, the records of all the those kinds of pictures. But you know, film scanning, we both own a film scanner. I mean, way back when, before we started digital, that's what we were doing. We got into scanning film. Mm-hmm. And not to go back into the history of that, but it's a pretty tedious process.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I have some element of ADD in me. And I'll just say that pushes on my limits.
Yeah, I mean, I had a Nikon cool scan, super cool scan 5000, and I think you had even the larger one because you had some medium format stuff.
Yeah, I still have a 4000 and then I think it's a 9000, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And they're good. I mean, they did a lot of nice stuff, but when you scan film, those scanners are slow, you know, and they're old, so they're only using they might at best have a USB 2 interface. That's
Yeah, one of mine is Firewire.
yeah, there was an
Yeah, the
original
older
one,
Firewire.
and I don't even know if that's compatible, and you might have to get adapters. So it's kind of like a pain, and we all have these aspiring moments. I think a lot of us, you know, especially some of our listeners who shot a lot of film way back when, like I know you have a ton of family pictures. My dad, for example, has got a ton of family pictures. They were all slides or whatever. And so scanning those is kind of a, I mean, it's a good rainy day activity, but it's still a pain. And you run into issues of, you know, gigantic TIFF files, you know, because you want to have them high resolution. You know, these were, what were those Nikon resolutions at? Like they would scan at something like
4,000.
4,000 DPI or
Yeah,
something like
exactly.
that, which sounds like a lot, but when you're only scanning a piece of 35 millimeter film, that's not really, you
No,
know,
it
you need
what
that much to enlarge
in
it.
today's terms, it gives you an image file that's what like what you would get out of a E750 or a Z6, 24 megapixel
Right.
image, which is good. It's
Yeah,
good.
and
However, it's a whole lot of grain and smudginess
right, and dust,
the
and you got to
most
be
part.
careful to clean everything. So this
Oh yeah.
adapter, because I don't have one, I saw that. It originally came out as an accessory for the D850, right? And so you just attach it to the front of the macro lens, is that the deal? So you need a 60 millimeter roughly macro lens. That's the focal length that it works with.
Right. And
And then
it's intended for the Nikon ones, which have 62 millimeter filter threads.
okay.
But and I haven't tried this experiment. It's that ADD thing, I think, that I mentioned earlier. But I'm pretty sure I could use an old 55 millimeter manual focus lens with a step up ring, and I think I'd be fine. Yeah, I'd have to have the extension tube to get it to life size. It would work. But I can talk a little bit about what I did. I've used it with a variety of film types. I've used it with color negatives, black and white negatives, and color slides. So I did the range that I thought people would be interested in and that I was interested in. And I first, and what I did was I used that adapter with my Z7, which was overkill. I should have just used the Z6, but it's what I grabbed. What the heck? And I did some initial things using Lightroom where, I shot the images in RAW mode, imported them, and then tried doing channel inversions and stuff in
This would be
Lightroom.
for
And
color negative film, where you
negative
really,
or
because
black and
slides is
white.
easy.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that in a sec.
But when you're scanning negatives, you have to invert
Yeah.
the image,
And
right?
I know how to invert them, but they ended up being a lot harder to work with than I was thinking. Once you invert them, all your controls start working backwards, or at least
Oh,
some of
gosh.
them. And there are all sorts of little irritating nuances. So I found this plugin called Negative Lab Pro. It's not cheap. It sells for about $100 US, but it is excellent. It is excellent. And what you do for a color negative is you put the negatives in the holder for the Nikon ES2 thing. You want to have it framed so that you can see at least a little bit of the clear orange part that's outside the image, and
So
that's what
between
you wipe.
frames.
Yeah, that's what you white balance on. And once you do that, things get better immediately. But then you bring up this little plugin after that, and tell it, what kind of film it is. Is it a color negative, black and white? Is it Kodak or Fuji? Just things like that. Hit a button, and then you get a very good looking image, actually. And then it's got its own controls that replicate the Lightroom sliders, and they work in a natural direction,
I
unlike
see.
what happens if
Yeah,
you try
because
to do it
backwards
in
would mess with
Lightroom.
your head.
Oh, it's really hard. And it's not a simple backwards thing. It's more complicated than that. So you use this little thing, and then you get, actually a very decent looking image. I was shocked at how good it looked compared to something out of a scanner. I'd say it was almost easier. And black and white stuff work just fine. It's even easier because you don't have to worry about the color balance problem really. And then with slide film, you don't have to use that plugin. You really can't. You just use normal Lightroom, and then I ported it in, and I used a flat camera profile, basically
I
the
was going to
lowest
ask you about
contrast.
that.
Yeah, you don't want to use one of the standard ones. It's way too contrasty.
So if you were doing this on a non on an older camera, maybe you if you don't have the some of the older Nikons don't have the flat picture control, for example. If and again, this is for shooting raw, and that's the nice thing about shooting raw. You could use that Adobe neutral, which is very low contrast, and that would
And
probably
yeah, and then you can always, take the contrast down even further if you needed to, just to taste. But it actually worked fine, with all of those. I was surprised, and it's very quick and easy. If you have a stack of slides or negatives to go through, it's a very quick way of getting them done and getting, reasonable results. And certainly they're more than fine for social media. You'd be fine
Oh
for,
gosh, yeah.
making prints too.
No, that's a
But
great accessory that I've thought about getting, and I just never got around to it. Mostly because I don't have the macro. My macro lens is not a 60; it's a 105.
And I just happen to have one from the mid-90s. It's the old one of the old 60mm 2.8 AFDs, and honestly, it had been sitting on my shelf for more than a decade because
Wow.
it's just too short for a lot of things. We've talked about this in episodes of macro. I like something that's more around a 105 or sometimes longer, and 60 is just too short.
Right,
But it's perfect for this, so
well, it's
and
designed
it's a
for it,
great little lens.
the short working distance. But I would think, like, for anybody who really wants to get their negatives or slides digitized quickly, this is certainly easier to do from a throughput standpoint, because my goodness, scanning a image on the film scanner, if you did the best quality settings, I mean, it would take minutes just to get the image pulled in. So you're talking about, you could maybe do 10 images in an hour, 10 or 12 images in an hour. And here you could probably do, in an hour, you could probably scan hundreds of, 100 pictures if you wanted to.
The one other thing I'll mention is, the way I set the camera just to make it easier was, and what I used for a lighting source was just outdoors. So I just stepped outside, pointed my, combined assembly up toward the sky, and had the camera on a daylight white balance, and things came out just fine. I didn't find any unevenness. It's got a translucent thing that diffuses the light. Worked fine. Got, good looking colors, considering what I was, copying, and it just was not hard. It was
That's great.
easy,
And
and
then
the
you
Z's
realize,
make it really easy.
and it's in moments like that when you start looking at those scans that you realize not only how much better of a photographer you are now,
Oh
but
gosh.
also how much better the technology really is. And the question of film versus digital should easily be put to bed at that point. I mean, in terms of like in terms of detail and things like that,
Oh yeah, the let me put it this way, there's nothing that I have where I would use this to create large prints and stuff that I would treat seriously, but it's wonderful for family photos and things like that. Just great. So I'm happy I have it. I would recommend it.
I guess the one thing we should probably mention, this accessory, again, it came out as a thing designed for the D850, and the D850 has a film digitizing for color negative mode where it inverts the image for you. It's one of the it's an option, and I can't remember what menu it's in, but it's in there. But if you're trying to do raw capture, that's not an option. That's going to give you a JPEG. So you would just need to be aware of that. I don't know if it applies a different tone curve or to make the result more natural. I'm not sure how that might work, but the Z bodies don't have that option in the menus. So you're just capturing straight raw file. I mean, there's no limitations to capturing anything. There's no physical incompatibilities. But you do have to then go through on the back end and use the raw processing tools to get the right look.
But it's not too hard. The main
No.
thing, and then I'll shut up, is you want to make sure your negatives or slides are relatively clean.
Yeah,
Get
yeah.
yourself a camel hair brush, one of those bulb syringes like a rocket blower, because what you don't have with this approach are all the fancy infrared dust removal systems that
Right.
slide film scanners had, which didn't always work, but they worked pretty well. So you don't have that. So you want to avoid a situation where you save time on the, capturing the image, but then eat it up all, and more
Oh God,
by all
you're
sorts of
killing
dust
yourself.
removal and cloning and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's painful. That's painful.
One last thing. Don't expect something that feels like a precision made work of art. It's very
Oh.
plasticky,
Oh
but it's
well.
fine. It'll
As long as
work
it works.
fine. Yeah. And they're like $140 US right now.
Cool.
Seem to be out of stock everywhere.
Oh well.
Yeah.
Such is
At any
life.
rate, you
Anyhow.
want to talk a little bit about your mad scientist focused bracketing experiments?
Yeah, this is something I've been just putting off, so I figured it'd be fine to do. One thing I've been getting a lot of feedback on from our listeners and also my clients and people on my business Facebook page, as well as our Image Doctors page, is this is a great time to play with close-up photography, because there's any number of subjects that you can fool around with. And if you've got a macro lens, it's great. So one of the things that has come out recently, in terms of the Nikon cameras, is their ability to automatically shift focus and do focus shift shooting. And I will say the documentation on this is a little bit vague. That might be an understatement. Because the first part is easy. When you go into these parameters, there's a bunch of different things you can set up, and it's kind of like setting up your intervalometer almost, your interval timer. How many shots are you going to take in the entire sequence, etc. And it's pretty simple to do. The way the Nikons work, and other camera manufacturers may do this differently, but at least with the Nikon system, is you focus on the nearest object, the nearest point, whatever that might be. You set the camera to its nearest point, and then what happens is that the camera will then take s focus steps forward, farther out into the frame, until one of two things happens: either until you've reached the number of shots that you've told it to capture, or until it reaches infinity, or in some cases, some lenses may go past infinity. But at some point, you run out of room to focus the lens because it reaches the end. And then you get this stack of images, and the idea, of course, then is that you blend those in focus stacking software, and you can do this in a variety of tools, including Photoshop. It's a little bit less. Photoshop can work fine for some shots. It's a little bit less advanced, but it does work. And for anyone who's just playing with things, if you're already using Lightroom, for example, you've got Photoshop, so that's easy to do. But the thing that was always bizarre to me was that there's a setting in the menu where it says, well, what's the step width? And the step width is how much, what's the distance increment that the focus steps forward each time. And it's kind of an interesting thing because you have a range of settings from 1 to 10. Nobody knows what they really mean. And the problem is that it can't really be defined all that well, except to say that it varies by aperture, it varies by focal length, and it varies by focus distance a little bit. So it's going to behave differently with a macro lens on a close-up subject than it might behave with a wide-angle lens on, say, a landscape subject. Because we've both used this tool for landscapes as an option, right? I mean, you can blend, and it doesn't take very many shots, you know, 2-3 shots at f/8, and you're good. So I decided I would just try to see if there was, you know, what rhyme or reason there is behind these settings and how things work. And so what I learned was, after doing multiple bracketed sequence, you know, focus stacking sequences, is that what I learned is that if you set it to, it appears that the algorithm that Nikon is using coincides with the apparent depth of field that you would get based on a standard depth of field calculation, you know, that 8x10 print.
Yeah, for the aperture that your based lens is
right.
set at.
So the focus step that it ratchets forward when you set your lens wide open is a shorter step at the same values. So let's say you set it to 5, right in the middle. You'll get a shorter step width with the lens set at f2 or 2.8 or whatever than you will at f11. Because at f11, you've got greater depth of field. So what I found is that for the most part, it's conserving, what it's calculating is the depth of field for that lens at that focus distance. And then each step width just gives you either more of that depth of field per step or less, you know. So bottom line is this. 7 seems to be the number at which the step width more or less equals the perceived depth of field, you know, setting. Mm-hmm. So anything shorter than that, anything smaller than that is going to give you overlap mm-hmm. between your images, at least in terms of perceived depth of field. Now, this depends on, again, how big you're viewing the image, et cetera. There's a million things that can go into that. So what I found is that if you go, if you're doing stuff where you've got a lot of fine detail, and you really want to preserve that, anything under 5 is going to be plenty. 4 is perfectly good. 4 or 5.
So here's the funny thing, right?
Right.
When we first played with those features, which was a while back now, I think we both gravitated toward a setting of about 4.
Yeah, that was seemed right.
It defaults to 5. We picked 4. And it sounds like that's still the answer.
Yeah. So looking at my, you know, very non-precise measurements, you know, I set up stuff and I did a lot of quasi-scientific, you know, it's hard to measure this stuff, at least on the kitchen table. But it seems like a setting of 5 will give you about a step width that's about 65% or so of the depth of field, meaning you're going to get somewhere around, you know, 40% overlap. And for most shots, that's going to be, for most close-up shots, that's going to be fine. Where it becomes a difference, where it might become a difference, is that if you've got a subject that's got a lot of fine detail, and you really want to overlap the focus plane more than the perceived depth of field, you know, the perceived focus plane, go down a little more, you know, a smaller number, but then you have to use more shots. So honestly, mm-hmm. these settings are all great, but they only work for setups where you don't have a lot of movement. You know, you're on a tripod, your subject isn't moving. This is not the kind of thing that you can do with a wildflower on a breezy day. You know, this is not going to work, but it will work for landscape shots. And the real reason why you would do it is because instead of stopping down to f/16 or f/22, which starts to introduce diffraction softening in your images, you can shoot this at f/8 or f/5.6.
Right.
And you get better quality. That's mostly for macros. The other thing you can do too is that it gives you some interesting control, because you can have good depth of field for your subject but retain an out of focus background, because you're shooting the scene at a wider aperture than you would if you were just stopping right. down. So sometimes distracting backgrounds, you get nicer bokeh if you shoot in a bracketed sense. But again, this is, you really want a tripod. But it's amazing, like it actually works pretty well, and I was astounded like how good those algorithms are, you know, the
Yeah,
and
it's not hard to use.
no,
It sounds challenging, but it's actually pretty simple. And one other benefit, I think, you were talking about avoiding stopping down. The other thing is it can do is keep you from solving a depth of field problem via a very expensive, big and heavy tilt shift lens,
Right.
which is the way I was kind of handling that thing in the past. And problem is I never had enough room in my backpack to lug that thing around also, and it was, a single focal length, so I didn't have
Right.
a choice. So this works well, I
I will
think.
say that with the, for those of our listeners who do have a Nikon Z system, I will say that that 14 to 30 lens is just built for this purpose. It has very minimal, almost no focus breathing whatsoever. In other words, you just don't get those changes in focal length as you shift between near and infinity focus. And that's fine. And most software programs can handle some of that. Photoshop is going to have more problems with it than some of the dedicated software. So I'm using a program, I think we both have it. It's been around for years, called Helicon Focus. And if you're really into this, it's definitely something I would recommend. You can get it either at a in an annual price, or you can buy a perpetual license, just depending on the features that you want. And it handles the focus breathing aspects way better. So like the 105 macro that I have, that focal length changes a lot when you focus in, you know, as you focus from near to far. And when I took the same test shots and I blended them in Photoshop, I got gaps, I got blurry, you know, sections that just didn't mask right. And you can spend hours trying to figure out which mask, which layer, and all that stuff. If that's your game, Helicon Focus or some other program like that is gonna be your friend, because it will just do a better job of blending to the point where it's like, wow, it's couldn't even believe it.
Yeah, it does a good job. The one thing I'll mention is it's a bit obtuse. It's
Oh, yes,
not
it's
the
not.
simplest software at all. You can tell it came out of a scientific background
Right, I was going to say it's more
initially.
of an engineering application than a photographic application, but it will support raw input and out. Like you can, one thing I tried to do, and this actually worked, was I set up my preset to export from Lightroom into Helicon Focus as a stack of DNGs. And then I had Helicon Focus return a DNG to Lightroom. Now it takes a long time, it's a slow process. But when I did that, my resulting DNG file still had all my Nikon picture controls. I could adjust the image normally. And for serious shots, that would be, you know, it's a nice thing. It's otherwise you're in that whole, I'm batching out TIFFs, I need to synchronize settings, et cetera. And if you mess
And
one up, you
get
got,
them right from the get-go as opposed to
yes,
being able to tweak them later. And
exactly.
that's that. I think both of us have the same version because they have multiple version types. And that feature shows up in the pro version.
Right.
So if
And
people
the
are interested in that, that's the one to look at.
right. It is a little more expensive, but it does have that option. Because otherwise they have three versions, and what I will say is, like, unless you're an engineer, you don't need the highest end version, because it does some things with like tethering and, you know, the camera you know, where it can control your camera for you to do the steps. But again, if you have a Nikon, that doesn't matter. So anyway, that's what we've been doing. There'll be more on this later. I'm putting together an online course, hopefully for close-up photography, so that's on my to-do list. But anyway, we've rambled on enough, I think, for another episode.
I think we did it.
Thanks for listening. Hopefully we'll be back next week with more fun and more topics. Don't forget to send us your show suggestions at our Facebook page, imagedoctors.com/, or no, facebook.com/imagedoctors. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, we'll see you next time then.
All right, bye-bye.